So that being the case, what do we do for these folks? Say tough luck. Don't ever get sick or hurt.
Refer them to a bankruptcy attorney.
Boost up the size.
That's right. This is what you can do.
That's after the fact.
Yeah, it's too late after you've jumped out of the plane to learn how to skydive. So here's their group plan. You can sell them a small individual plan that's 15% to 20%, depending upon the carrier, depending upon how much they make and so on, that would layer on top of that to hopefully A, offset the taxes, and B, this is not taxable because it's paid for with the individual's personal funds. And so that buttresses them back up to a whole lot better than they were. Go ahead.
My experience has been when you try to add an individual policy onto a group policy, the underwriting is really tough. They want to know, you know, a lot of information, a lot of specifics, and it's tough to get a policy issued if they already have some kind of group coverage. Is that true, or is that just...
Not necessarily. We do it all the time.
Okay.
Now, I shall give you an example of one that we did. Oh, it's not been that long ago.
But it usually represents 15% to 20%.
15% to 20% is about what they'll give them.
Okay.
You know, but if that's 15% to 20% no tax, you know, isn't going to restore them near whole, but it'll be close. Now, one thing I will tell you, Greg brought up the Cobra thing. There's one carrier in the marketplace that has a Cobra premium rider available built into it that will offset the Cobra thing, but only one.
Good, Ben? So I want to understand this comment from over here. So when you're both mentioning the 15% to 20%, so is that where the carrier will only give coverage of an additional 15% to 20% on top of what the group?
Yes, when you do the quote, Ben, they will. You'll put in the person's name and their income, and in the, every carrier has a thing for enforced coverage. You click on group. They want to know if it's taxable or not, which if it's employer paid, it's taxable. And their software will calculate how much they can get on top of the group coverage. And that being the case, it typically is...
That will be your tax-free coverage.
Correct.
Your personal. That will help compensate.
Right.
We're discussing.
Exactly. Greg, you had to hand it.
Here's a great opportunity, because one of the things that they're going to ask is what is the maximum benefit that they could have. For the highly compensated people, they may find that that maximum benefit isn't anywhere near 60% of their income to begin with.
It's called
$5,000 of benefit, and their income is $200,000. That's going to be woefully short, 60%. They can get more individual coverage.
It's called reverse discrimination of the highly compensated. And Greg, you've hit it right on the head. We saw one of these just the other day. A producer had us in, and he looked at several of the group cases he has sold, and that was exactly what it was. This was an attorney firm, about 18 people, and there were five attorneys in this firm making in excess of $250,000. We looked at the group benefit. It was 60%. To a maximum amount of $6,000. Now, what that meant is the people who their 60% was, you know, equaled $6,000. They were more or less covered. But you take those people making $250,000. Somebody who has a calculator, real quick, tell me what is 60% of $250,000 divided by 12, so we know what the monthly is. $250,000 is $20,000, so let's use that.
Well, at $250,000, it'd be 60% would be $12,500.
$12,500 would be their 60%, but if it has a cap of $6,000, guess how much they're going to get?
60% of $6,000.
Do they know that? Probably not. And so that's where you, as Greg just pointed out, have a real opportunity to say, hey, let's disturb you a little bit and let you know what it is you're really getting And it's not going to be 60% of your $20,000 a month. It's 60% up to $6,000. And can you live on that? And somebody who's making $20,000 a month, their house payment may be $6,000. Now, let's take it one step further. And so we have found a fix here that you can sell the individual on top. Now, let's define earnings for just a minute. Several earnings definitions are in the group products. Forrest, you smiled.
Oh, absolutely.
What's the earnings definitions you're in?
Just W-2 income. How about that one?
Okay. So these people who have group policies may very well think that if they're, let's suppose that the guy makes $100,000 a year, he gets a $50,000 base, and then makes $50,000 more in bonuses. If the definition of disability on his group plan says base salary only, guess what he's going to get 60% of? Of $50,000, not 60% of his $100K. So my question is, does he know that? Probably not. And so that's why I suggest when someone is dealing with you and they say, I've got it at work, you say,
great.
That is wonderful news. Do you know how it works? And you dig into it and let's say the disability on paper and you go through this little exercise. One thing it's going to do in the eyes of that client, if they'll let you go through that, it will establish you as somebody who understands and cares about them. And then they're more likely inclined to place that business with you than not. So, Greg.
I was going to mention one other thing that you want to look at. The definitions that group gives for different terms isn't the same as individual. For example, when they say own occupation, that means something entirely different in the group market than it does the individual market.
Exactly right. You want to explain that a little further?
Okay. So when group says own occupation for the entire benefit period, for example, like we were talking about doing for the
dentist over here,
we were talking about, that means they can't do the substantial and material duties of their occupation, but it also means that they are not actively engaged in another occupation. So it's on the individual.
Whoa, did you just hear what he said? Say it again, Greg.
So when they say own occupation, we think that means if I can't do my job, then I'm going to get the full benefit. But that's only true if you're not doing something else. If you're not gainfully employed in another occupation, then you could be residually but not totally disabled. When on the individual side, when we say own occupation, we usually mean that means if I can't do the duties of my occupation, I get the full benefit even if I'm gainfully employed in another occupation.
Let me share a story with you. Thank you, Greg. I did a pre-licensing class one time a number of years ago, and there was a young man sitting in the class whose father-in-law was a dentist up in Idaho someplace. And he was a dentist, and he became disabled. And as he described his father-in-law's current circumstances, his father-in-law was not able to practice dentistry, but he certainly was not laying flat down in bed. He was relatively up and at him, but he could not be a dentist for whatever reason. But the definition of his disability policy said, I'm inferring this just because what he did say, was that if you pursue anything else, we're going to cut you off. And so he had an incentive not to try to go to work anywhere else. And so he was the neighborhood good deed doer. If the little old ladies needed a ride to the grocery store, he could take them to the grocery store. If he could be the neighborhood go home teaching to 50 people in a month kind of guy, because he had nothing else to do, that as long as he wasn't earning a living. And so bottom line on this, when you are dealing in any disability conversation, but work side in particular, let us find the definition of earnings, the definition of disability, and how is it going to react when they become disabled. Now, one comment on Greg's here. I've got a client right now who is on disability, and he has, well, it's these dentists right here. We sold them some individual, we sold them some group, and the terms of his group policy were such, because he has pursued another occupation, and the terms of his group policy were such that I think half of everything he made, they were deducting from his group plan. So he would get probably about half of his benefits, but he wouldn't get the whole benefit, whereas on his individual policy, when it was all ONOC, you'll often do whatever.
Because it was offsetting due to income he was getting somewhere else?
The income he was getting somewhere else, working in another field. Okay. Now, that having been said, opportunities then, reverse discrimination is where you can find opportunities to help them. The taxation issue is one where you can help them. Now, let's talk about the good side of working in the employer world. I mean, we've kind of digested how this stuff works. But as you work with employers, and a lot of employers really care about their employees, some more than others, but you'll find that there's typically two groups of employees at any one employer firm. There will be those who sit around the conference table, and they are the key people in the firm. And then there are the rank and file people that don't sit around the conference table. And they are more inclined to take care of the people sitting around the conference table than they are the rank and file. I'll give you an example. We had a firm one time that it was an asphalt paving company. And in this asphalt paving company, which, by the way, that's got to be about the dirtiest industry I can think of, you know, right up there next to mining. But whatever the case, there were 20 people in this firm who were sales, managerial, office staff, and so on. Well, the employer was most concerned about those, not so concerned about the guys out driving the dump trucks and, you know, shoveling asphalt. And so as a result, there was a carve-out took place that those people were taken care of, the asphalt shoveling people who probably needed it that much or worse, you know, didn't get it. But you can do this with disability. Now, that having been said, here is one of the things that will help you, A, in the sales world of it, and B, in taking care of clients. Every census you get, if you will look at it, you will identify people who have higher incomes, may be reverse discriminated against, but even the rank and file sometimes need help. Now, here, this is a real life story that has worked. We had a producer one time who called and said, "Hey, can you get us a group DI quote?" "Sure can. This is a 6-person computer software company. They do programming, networking, that kind of stuff. There are two owners, each making a very nice 6-figure income, about $150K each, and then the rank and file are making in the 50 and 60 range. We got a quote for the group, short-term, group long-term, and group life, and for all 6 of them, the premium was about $240 a month, because somebody mentioned that it was cheaper on the group side. So divide that by 6. For $40 a head, they were getting a 60% to $6,000 DI plan, a 60% to $1,500 a week short-term disability plan with a 2-week elimination period, and $50,000 worth of group term life insurance. Not bad for $40 a head. And so as you are talking to people, the answer is yes, group can be a very good bargain, especially for an underlying foundation. However, seeing these $150,000 salaries on the two owners led us to say, let's look at this census with these people in mind and see what they can get. We ran some quotes, and lo and behold, the two owners could get, it seems to me it was about $4,000 more coverage on top of their 6,000 group, more or less, going from memory. And it was not that expensive, but at the same time, they said, what about those other 4? They probably needed 2. This was a very generous employer. And we calculated it, and for, you know, $15 to $20 a month, they could layer individual policies on top of the group one, and they bought it for everybody. Isn't that a great place to work?
So they talking about a group plan that's just very basic,
uh-huh,
and then stepping in with an individual
plan. Individual on top that was fully underwritten.
Okay.
And because these policies, especially on employees, were very small, you know, $1,000, $1,500,
right.
Basically it was an application and a telephone interview, and it was done. There was no blood, no tax documents, anything like that. So for them, not for the owners, it was a little more involved, but
right.
Fortunately they were mostly healthy. But what this did for them is now all six of those people have an individual policy and a group plan. But this employer has now gone from six employees to about 10 or 12. Guess what happens every time they add a new employee? They add another individual policy in addition to the group. So for you as the salesperson, this becomes, if you have companies that are increasing in size, a revenue stream. Greg, you had your hand up.
Could you also, since the employer was paying for it, defend it as a guaranteed standard issue?
We're going to talk about that next. In this case, GSI was probably not the fit, but let's talk about GSI, because that would be a great segue, Greg. Because, by the way, Greg, there's your peanuts for the question, for the segue. Let's talk about guaranteed standard issue, because that would be a good way for us to wind this down as far as individual or group and that. In the employer-sponsored world, GSI is the acronym. We're full of them in our industry. It stands for Guaranteed Standard Issue. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that that GSI is not a product. GSI is an underwriting concept. And how it works is this, and it is employer paid. Some carriers will do it as small as 5. Are you guys at 5 on your GSI?
Yep.
Okay. There's most of them at 5. There's ones that's at 10. I mean, almost all the white-collar DI carriers will have GSI in some format. But it is employer-sponsored.
These are all individual policies.
These are individual policies. Thank you. Meaning that, and this can be either done freestanding with group or without group or with group, either one. And so it may be their only coverage or it may be a supplement to their group. But they're individual policies sold at a discount.
Usually with unisex rates.
Unisex rates, which helps the ladies. But they're portable. And the reason that it is to the good is the underwriting is very, very simple. Because you mentioned the snarly piece of underwriting.
Yeah.
On a guaranteed standard issue contract, and I'm thinking of one that we were just talking about just the other day, the one that had the attorney firm, there were only two questions. And I'm quoting from memory, have you been unable to work in the last 6 months for more than a week due to sickness or injury? Yes or no? What's that?
That's Mass's definition there.
Is it? Mm-hmm. That's the same one that Meritus uses too. So have you been unable to work for more than a week in the last 6 months due to sickness or injury? Yes or no? And do you need, have you ever suffered the loss of a limb, mobility, and there was one other thing. Bottom line, if the person has been working, is not blind and impaired, because I think blindness was in it. It was a presumptive thing, perhaps. You get the policy. So no questions about bad backs, mental nervous, heart bypass. Those things, we do get to do an end run on them, because the carriers are willing to say, if you got 5, we'll guarantee standard issue these. And I tell you, it works. It works well. Here's another example. This is about 5 years ago. I had a car dealership, about a dozen people. This car dealership, there was the owner who had some kind of back issue that had bothered him in the past. He was working and all, but he just knew at some point his back was going to give him grief. And that being the case, he was wanting DI. And so in this case, we sold a group plan on everybody in the office and the whole dealership. And that was covering everybody 60% to whatever it was, 5,000 probably at the time. And then he picked himself, his finance manager, and the office manager, and two other people, and did a GSI offer layered on top of his group. And he got a discounted policy, permanent policy that isn't going to go away even if he does.
Completely portable.
No questions about his back and his naggy pains there.
And no riders.
And no riders on it.
Two other things that I mentioned real quickly. Usually, just by group, the one thing that protects these insurance companies is they usually have a pre-existing condition clause for anything that happened in the last 12 months that
right.
they got treatment for is going to be excluded for, say, a 12 or 24-month period, depending on the carrier.
Right.
They also usually ask whether you're a smoker or not, because
they'll do a 20% or 25% up change on tobacco use. So that, by the way, we got just a few minutes left. Let me pass the stamp around so you can stamp your thing.
Who are the companies, Bart, that you use that are the most competitive? It just depends on.
Depends upon the circumstance. Right. You know, Forest here represents Guardian. They have a great product. We've used them some, but Forest can help you through and through with that one. Emeritus Principal Standard seem to be well in the white-collar world. You've got the folks at Illinois Mutual over here who have a display out. They do well in the blue-collar world. And the Lloyd's of London people represented by Peterson across the aisle from them. You know, make sure you do top and bottom on the CE form, by the way. Bottom line, it's all a custom fit deal depending upon the circumstances.
So there's really not one company.
No.
There
are some who think that they're the only true insurance company, but in reality, all the carriers we have in the industry now are good.
Yeah.
You know, I find no fault in them. So, that being said, in the employer marketplace, you find opportunities to sell group, you find opportunities to sell individual on a guaranteed standard issue platform or on a underwritten basis but at a discount. So by the way, on that group that had the six computer people, we were able to get them a 20% discount off of unisex rates on their individual policies, which they can take with them. They did do underwriting for it, but they were small policies. The bottom line, if those people move along, the discount stays. And anybody who's added to that employer gets that 20%. And so, what is the advantages to you? Well, I will tell you that in the world of, like, the six-person computer software company, the guy had a policy that was going to have a premium of $240, take 10-15% of that. He was going to make $35 to $40 a month in commissions. I says, well, that's good. That'll take your wife to dinner once a month. But I says, let's look at it. And that's when we discovered the need for the individual for the two owners, plus for the other four employees. And when they were done, he discovered they needed some life insurance. So in the end, he took a $40 a month commission and turned it into about $4,000 for the first year commissions that first year. That's off of a six-person group. So think what you can find if you find one that has 20 people or 40 people. The opportunities are many, and the good news is, from the standpoint of competition, not many folks are talking DI. The health brokers tend to get fatigued when they get done with the health insurance rate increases every year. They're embarrassed to even bring up something else that might cost the employer money, but yet this is the least expensive employee benefit they can afford.
And the most utilized.
And the one most utilized. Yes, thank
you.
Bart, the one thing that some of my people are looking at makes their package a much better for the employer, you know, well-rounded. You know, they've got life, long-term care, disability. It looks like a better firm to work for.
And you do not have to be a Fortune 500 company to have that, so thank you. Now, your CE time is up, folks. What did you learn today? Tell me something you might have heard today you hadn't heard before. Anything?
Unisex.
Okay. By the way, did we define what that is?
It women's prices are the same as the men's?
If we're,
and
go ahead.
I'm assuming that women's prices sometimes could be higher.
They are always higher. On the life insurance world, guys, if we're buying life insurance, we all get to pay more, and the ladies have a better rate because you ladies live longer. On the disability side, it's the exact inverse of it. The guys get a better price, and the ladies pay more. Why is that? Well, for us guys, we will let, you know, a naggy little thing go on until we're so bad off it's festered in us till we're, you know, terminally ill and we die. The ladies on the other hand are perhaps smarter, and they notice something, they go get it looked at, and as a result, they get it fixed. So the ladies have a more higher claims frequency than the men. Putting it in good common terms, we men go out of life in a blowout, and women go out in a slow leak. And so, you know, that's why the claims are a little higher on the things.
Okay.
Well, there's also a few conditions that men probably won't have, like, for example, complications of maternity or endometriosis or some of those
sure.
type of things. Probably a safe assumption that men's not going to have those conditions.
I would think it's probably not going to happen.
Sexist, Greg.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a good review of all of it.
So are we okay, guys?
Yeah,
that's good.
Thanks.
I'm not Brett Neville, but you got Bart the DI nut. Stop at the Elysian thing. You grab a bag of peanuts on the way out.